It's Thursday, June 4th. Welcome to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, Western diplomats meet to discuss ways to defeat the Islamic State.
There are thousands of ISIL fighters that have been taken off the battlefield due to the combined impact of our coalition military airstrikes, as well as the efforts of Iraqi and Kurdish security forces on the ground.
Turkey gets ready for parliamentary elections. A top Thai general turns himself in to authorities. Fallout continues from the FIFA corruption scandal. And rapper Kanye West has a new album and a new single. That's all coming up on VOA's International Edition. The military operation against the Islamic State group has killed more than 10,000 militant fighters in less than 1 year. That's according to a top U.S. diplomat, and that comes as 22 more coalition airstrikes targeted the group in Iraq and Syria. U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken told France Interradio one day after he and officials from partner countries met in Paris with the Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi to discuss their strategy to fight IS. But later, White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the militant group is recruiting internationally to replenish its forces. VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with Khalil Anani of Johns Hopkins University about the Allied strategy and if it's working.
Professor Anani, following the consecutive defeats of the Iraqi forces countering fighters of the so-called Islamic State, the international coalition is now re-evaluating the strategy against ISIS. Would such revision need to take into consideration the socio-economic and political problems that help ISIS to grow?
I would think so. I think ISIS as a phenomenon is very complicated and has many dimensions. One of them relates to the socio-economic conditions in the region. Second is the failure of the political transition after what the so-called Arab Spring. Many of young Arabs, they lost faith in democracy and they lost hope in the future. That's why ISIS can capitalize on this kind of despair and disappointment and try to recruit as many as Arabs as can. So I think to tackle ISIS issue, there is a need to tackle the socio-economic problems in the Arab world that would produce such ideas and such an ideology.
What role did the political exclusion play in the rise of ISIS?
I think it plays a very important role here. Here I'm talking about the inability of the current regimes to include the opposition, particularly the moderate Islamic opposition, such as the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Egypt is a very visible example here when it comes to the rise and the emergence of radical ideas. Since the July 3rd coup of 2013, many young Islamists adopted radical ideas, and they would prefer to join extremist movements more than joining the political process because they lost faith in democracy and ballot box. So I think the exclusion and marginalization of moderate voices would absolutely lead to the emergence of radical and extremist voices.
So what role can the U.S. play in prodding Arab leaders to improve the economic and political situation?
One of the main mistakes of the West, particularly the United States, is the declaration of authoritarianism in the region and the acceptance of repressive governments. I think the West should not recognize these governments, particularly in Egypt. Stability cannot be achieved without giving people their rights, without opening the public sphere, a public space for people to express their views and their ideas. The second is the tackling the economic issue. And here, there are many ways that the West can play. The first one is try to help the local governments to distribute the economic wealth among people, to prevent economic grievances among the poor. Second, to encourage the financial institutions to give assistance and to increase its grants packages to these countries. Third, to make sure that these grants and these money would be distributed fairly among people.
That's Khalil Anani of Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. Michael Lippin joins me now in the studio for a look at what our audience has been saying about the latest U.S. claims of military success against the Islamic State. Michael?
Thanks, David. Yes, one of the top web stories today on voanews.com is about Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken declaring that U.S.-led forces have killed 10,000 Islamic State fighters. One comment posted on the bottom of that article comes from a reader by the name of Willie Webb from the U.S. city of Phoenix, Arizona. The reader argues that the Islamic State won't necessarily be deterred by losing so many fighters, saying, "The Islamic State has thousands of toilet cleaners, sex slaves, and cooks, and also 10,000 fewer fighters than they otherwise would have. Unacceptable losses for anyone, except for the Islamic State psychotic murderers," as he calls them. We also posted the article about the claimed killing of more than 10,000 IS militants on our main Twitter account at VOA News. Twitter user Obrero Trabajando replied to our tweet by saying, "Good, but not enough." Now, if you go to our Voice of America Facebook page, you can also find a short TV report about Blinken's meeting with Iraqi and French officials in Paris yesterday. Just below the video, one of our Turkish readers, Timuçin Konuksever, commented on Iraq's appeal for more weapons to fight IS militants. Konuksever wrote that help was needed yesterday before the militants jump into Europe. David, back to you.
All right, thanks a lot. That's VOA's Michael Lippin. We welcome your comments as well. You can log on to our website, www.voanews.com. We're also on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Voice of America.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Voters in Turkey go to the polls Sunday, and international monitors are closely watching to make sure that the ballot is fair. Opinion polls indicate the opposition People's Democratic Party, or HDP, is hovering around the 10% threshold required to enter parliament. If the HDP is successful, the 50 or more seats it could secure would come at the expense of the ruling AK Party, its chief rival in the predominantly Kurdish southeast of Turkey. Analysts say those seats could be the difference between the AK party retaining or losing its majority. VOA Kurdish service reporter Mutlu Civarulu is in Istanbul, where he spoke to Çiğdem Ubaş, a teacher volunteering for the HDP.
Çiğdem, I see that you are in front of the HDP stand. Why HDP? Why are you working for HDP?
Because we believe that we need freedom, peace, and emancipation of women. It's obvious for us that AKP became more monolithic and autocratic. This is for us a big chance to break that pave to autocracy. So we came together with all different communities and different oppositions in Turkey. We managed to establish an electoral front.
What makes you this confident that you will pass the threshold, overcome the threshold?
We know that after the presidential election, Selahattin Demirtas took about 9.8%, and we have more people who say that they will give this time around, first time, to the HDP.
Whoever we speak, CHP, MHP, they all concerned that there's going to be fraud. Why do you think so?
Because so much fraud is in the system, on the one hand, but we don't want to surrender to this. We will put to every ballot box our observers, and we set up technological program. All our school organizers will send the pictures of this election results. So we believe that we won't let them to steal our votes as much as they want.
Okay, Çiğdem, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Be sure to listen to VOA for results of Turkey's elections on many of these same frequencies. You can also log on to our website, www.voanews.com. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. Coming up, a senior Thai military officer turns himself in. What does Sepp Blatter's resignation mean for the future of football? And Kanye West has a new album, a new single, and soon, a new baby. That's all coming up on International Edition. A senior Thai military officer is denying accusations he was involved in a massive human trafficking ring that helped create a desperate migrant crisis in Southeast Asia. Lieutenant General Manas Kungpang turned himself in to police Wednesday in Bangkok. He made no statement, but officials later said he planned to fight the charges. The Thai National Police Chief Sumyat Pumpangwang said that he had confirmed that he was not involved in human trafficking, so he denies the charge, but investigators will work on the details. The Thai government has arrested dozens of local officials allegedly involved in the criminal syndicate, which trafficked migrants from Myanmar and Bangladesh through Thailand's southern provinces. The crackdown forced many of the people smugglers to abandon their victims, leaving thousands of migrants stranded at sea with little or no food or supplies. Fighting flared Wednesday outside a main separatist stronghold in eastern Ukraine, leaving more than a dozen people dead and threatening to push the country back into full-blown civil war. Each side blamed the other for the new violence, which Ukrainian officials say began near Donetsk when about 1,000 pro-Russian rebel fighters, backed by artillery and tanks, launched a pre-dawn attack just west of the city. Rebels reported 15 civilian and combatant deaths. Authorities in Kiev said that at least 3 government troops were killed and 30 others wounded in the town of Marinka. Ukraine Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk accused Russia of inciting the new fighting. The Kremlin insists it has no direct role in the crisis. Amnesty International says more than 8,000 Nigerians have died as a result of the government's campaign to stamp out the insurgent group Boko Haram. The human rights group says its researchers found that since 2009, more than 1,200 people have been executed during raids by the Nigerian military. Amnesty says at least 7,000 more have died in custody because of torture, thirst, hunger, or severe overcrowding in jails. The rights group says that senior military officials had full knowledge of the detentions and high death rate, but took no action to halt the abuses. Amnesty is calling for Nigeria's new government under President Muhammadu Buhari to launch an investigation. Coming up, Sepp Blatter steps down as FIFA's president. Now what? And Kanye West has a new single. That's on VOA's International Edition. Court records unsealed in the United States Wednesday reveal a former member of FIFA's executive committee has admitted to accepting bribes in connection with the 1998 and 2010 World Cups. As part of a plea agreement, Charles Blazer told a U.S. judge that he and others on FIFA's executive committee accepted bribes in conjunction with the choice of France as the host of the 1998 World Cup. The American says that he also accepted bribes over the 2010 event, which was awarded to South Africa. Meanwhile, the International Police Force, Interpol, issued a red notice for 2 former FIFA officials and 4 executives on charges that include corruption and racketeering. Federation President Sepp Blatter is reportedly the target of probes by federal prosecutors and the FBI here in the United States. Blatter has resigned his post just days after being reelected to a fifth term. For reaction to that move, VOA's Jeffrey Young spoke with Chris Eaton, the executive director of Sport Integrity at the International Institute for Sport Security in Doha, Qatar.
Obviously, something has happened that we're not aware of, and it's clear to me that this resignation would not be made in the absence of something that that has significantly occurred since his re-election recently. So there's something I'm sure that will come out in the fullness of time about why he's resigned.
One would jump to a conclusion and say, maybe they got the goods on Mr. Blatter this time. There is a Swiss investigation, after all. Is that the sort of thing you're referring to?
Well, clearly there's two investigations concurrent, at least two, and that's the US investigation and the Swiss investigation. Both have been taking records from FIFA. Both have been examining evidence and hearing from sources. So it's clear that at least those two investigations might have some additional information, additional evidence that has put pressure on the president to resign.
You made the comment in an earlier interview with me that FIFA is one of the most opaque organizations on the planet. What is FIFA needing to do to become a responsible sport organization?
First, it needs to grow up and grow up into the real world of business affairs and transnational, multinational business. It needs to understand the need for transparency, accountability, best practice, know your customer, fit and proper persons tests, all these significant commercial and global commercial standards that a business that FIFA have never applied. They are really a private monopoly, a private club operating a sport monopoly. It's time for them to grow up.
That's VOA's Jeff Young speaking with Chris Eaton at the International Institute for Sport Security in Doha, Qatar.
This is Science in a Minute. I'm Rick Pantaleo. A popular scientific theory suggests that modern humans originated in Africa, but a number of them left some 60,000 years ago and migrated to areas throughout the world. Scientists theorize that humans migrating out of Africa took two possible paths, a southern and a northern route. The southern route took humans out of Africa through Ethiopia, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, and the Arabian Peninsula. The northern route suggests that humans exited Africa through the area that is now known as Egypt. Scientists from the Wellcome Trust Sanger Institute and the University of Cambridge recently conducted a genetic analysis that suggests modern human populations most likely used the northern route and left Africa through Egypt. Details of the researchers' findings have been published in the American Journal of Human Genetics. And that's your Science in a Minute.
Controversy is a word that is often associated with rapper Kanye West, from grabbing Taylor Swift's trophy at the Video Music Awards to disappearing in a shower of sparks on television at the Billboard Music Awards to his ever-present presence with his wife Kim Kardashian. Well, Kanye has a new tune out now, and to talk about that and other things from Kanye's universe, I'm joined by Larry London. Larry, welcome.
Oh, thank you, David. Yes, Kanye West has a new album. It's called Swish, which is his seventh album.
And it's a studio album.
It's a studio album filled with a variety of performers. He recorded with Taylor Swift. They patched up their differences. He recorded with Paul McCartney, and quite a few other artists make guest appearances on the new album.
Now, is that a smart move on his part? It's kind of getting the great names to come on board with him?
Absolutely. It's a great PR move, especially at a time where he probably needs a little positive PR. He's caused a lot of, shall we say, negative reaction on his own for his own behavior, showing up 3 hours late to concerts and things like that. But but he's turning things around. In fact, he's got to watch himself a little bit. He gave a commencement address recently at the Los Angeles Trade Technical College.
Right.
And he mentioned, usually when you're the absolute best, you get hated on the most.
Oh, okay.
So trying to redeem himself and at the same time a little foot in mouth.
Well, Kanye is known for his, shall we say, high confidence, high sense of self. Now, he's also about to be a father for the second time.
That's right. His little beautiful baby, Northwest, is about to have a sibling. Kim Kardashian announced this past week that she is pregnant with her second child due in December.
Now, has Kanye expressed an opinion about Caitlyn Jenner?
No, I haven't heard anything about Caitlyn Jenner. I haven't heard him. He stays low when it comes to the Kardashian family. He doesn't really speak out, certainly not negatively, because he knows what's best for him. He wants to keep the peace at home. So he just talks very positively about the Kardashian family and keeping up with the Kardashians, the TV show, and all that's going on in their world. But he doesn't talk about Caitlyn.
He doesn't. He hasn't talked about
Caitlyn. He hasn't spoke about that.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Somehow I don't think that Kanye will be left out of the mix, as it were. So his new tune is called All Day. Is this a, what is this? Tell me about the genesis of this tune.
Well, it's in typical Kanye fashion. He's got all kinds of technical effects going on, which, you know, kind of mask his real vocals. But Kanye's had an interesting story throughout his life. There was a time when he got into a car accident. He almost lost his life. His mouth was wired shut for a period of time, and he's battled his way back. He lost his mom and done a number of things to pay tribute to her. But this particular song is an actual homage to his own life and a day in his life. So it could be any day. His last album, you know, Yeezus, was kind of an interesting approach to music. But this approach is a little softer. A little softer Kanye than we're used to seeing.
Okay, well, let's take a listen. This is Kanye West and his new single, All Day. Larry, thank you for being with us. You can also check out Larry's show, Border Crossings. You can find a link to it on our website, www.voanews.com.
All day, all day. All day, all day. How long you ball, ball? All day. How much time you spent at the mall? All day. How many runners do you got on call? All day, twist. How long they keep you in call? All day. Take you to get this fly? All day. Tell your P.O. how long you been high? All day. Now already know I'm straight from the shop. All day, top. All day.
Thanks for joining us for VOA's International Edition. We welcome your questions or comments on our program. You can post them on our website, www.voanews.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/Voice of America. Tracy Carter directed our program. Aydin Erkut was our engineer. I'm David Byrd. Thanks for listening.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As African leaders continue working to end the political crisis in Burundi, the United States again calls on President Pierre Nkurunziza to respect the term limit provision of the Arusha Agreement in order to restore stability and help his country heal after weeks of violence. With his controversial candidacy threatening to undermine Burundi's economic and democratic progress, the president must consider how his attempt to retain power will affect the future of his country and his legacy. East African leaders from Tanzania, Uganda, and Kenya, along with South African President Jacob Zuma, met May 31st in Tanzania to discuss the crisis, following an earlier summit on May 13th. They called for the postponement of elections by at least a month and a half to create the right conditions for voting, as well as disarming the ruling party's youth militias. Protests erupted in Burundi in late April in response to Nkurunziza's decision to run for another term in June 26 polls. Opponents say that violates the Constitution and the Arusha Agreement that was key to ending a deadly 13-year civil war. The United States government's position remains that the Arusha Agreement must be respected and that any violation of Arusha seriously undermines Burundi's stability. The conditions for free, fair, transparent, and credible elections do not currently exist due to the closure of political space, the shutting down of independent media, the government's violent response to political protests, and continuing reports of violence and intimidation by armed youth militia. These policies are not in accord with the principles of a democratic country, especially one facing national elections. The United States calls for restraint by all Burundian stakeholders and regional partners. We urge all parties to continue to support the ongoing peaceful efforts to find a solution that is in accord with the Arusha Agreement, and to refrain from any acts that could contribute to the climate of instability or undermine the rule of law in Burundi.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.